Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today, as always, on Monday, is my good friend, Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
Hey, it's Monday, and we are 40-something days away from the NBA season. 50-something? I don't know.
That seems unreasonable to me. It seems absolutely unreasonable to think that we're going to have basketball here again that soon, but nevertheless, it is exciting because I think that it also means that the closer we get to that day, the closer we are to having some transaction stuff to break down. Shams Charania had a piece today in The Athletic. It's his inside pass with Shams, and he kind of goes through all the scuttlebutt that he has and just airs it out there on The Athletic, so you can go to theathletic.com and get The Athletic for half price right now. So I actually gave away five 30-day passes today on Twitter, but if you missed out on that, go to theathletic.com/downtodunk, and you get it for 50% off. So it's a great deal.
That's insane.
And you can get this for free. Not for free, but you get this for 50% off. You can listen to our podcast ad-free. Lots of great benefits. And if you like multiple sports, it's just like a no-brainer to have it, to have access to it, just because the reporting is second to none. And I can confidently say that.
with the current state of the media.
Yeah,
yeah, and even if you don't like a sport today, I mean, I got into NFL, like the weeds of the NFL, mainly because I was able to read stuff on The Athletic. I mean, I won't tell the team that I support because it's kind of hated in OKC for various reasons. but, you know, I mean, you know that I'm a number guy. And, and I mean, I had like no knowledge of the NFL whatsoever, and in a span of a season and a half, now I'm all into all the advanced metrics that they have, pressure, quarterback pressures, and stuff like that. I mean, it's EPA and whatnot. It's all thanks to some great writer that The Athletic has. So,
yeah, go check it out. It's worth your time. So one of the biggest thing is Ben Simmons, and it's something that we're all waiting on. We're all waiting to see what they're going to do with Ben. It feels like he's not going to play for the Sixers, and I'll even go in and say I don't think he's going to play for the Sixers at all. Huh. Whether that be he gets traded before the season, which I think is likely, or he just refuses to show up. You know, I think that that's probably on the table. As well. So as of now, Minnesota and Toronto are the two teams that have been trying to get Ben, which is just like funny. Like Toronto is trying to build a team of only guys who dribble and defend and pass and have trouble with their shot. Like that's
and are 6'9" and above.
Yeah, and our 6-9 ball. Yeah, that's what they. That's the team they want. And Ben Simmons would fit that to a T. Now, the problem is, for both Minnesota and Toronto, what can they give back to the Sixers that make the Sixers a title favorite or even a contender? You know, the package that Minnesota has to offer is not going to get them there. Like Beasley, McDaniels, D'Angelo Russell, like that's not going to get you there. That's mm-hmm. not going to take you to the promised land. I mean, D'Angelo Russell, if he's your second best player or third best player, you're just not going that far. So they're obviously waiting on Dame.
Yeah.
And they should be patient. They should be patient. The Sixers should. Because if Dame becomes available, then you offer Ben and you offer any amount of picks possible to pair Dame with Joel Embiid. And then we talk a lot about how there's not many teams in the league that are going to be in the West that are for sure going to be in the lottery. Now, mm-hmm. if they get Ben Simmons, I don't think they'll be in the lottery, or at least they could still compete for the play-in. That's certainly possible, but we could see a Rockets-like transformation for the Blazers if they do indeed trade Dame, but that's all theoretical at this point.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that a team like Portland will want Ben Simmons in a little trade. This is not what I would go after. Mm-hmm. And so I think that teams like Minnesota and teams like Toronto are right to be in the pursuit of a guy mm-hmm. like Simmons, because I think that the Sixers will need them in order to get a 1A type of guy. Because if they want Lillard, I mean, if you're Portland and you give away Lillard, the thing that you want is probably 5 first rounders. And if you're the Sixers, I mean, you cannot give all that amount, an unprotected first round. You can give swaps, but I think that like 5 real unprotected first rounders is a good ask for Damian Lillard, which I value probably a little bit more than James Harden as of today.
Why
is that? Because I think he's a better leader and as efficient in terms of scoring. And as bad defensively. I mean, if you want a high charter guy to pair with Embiid, I think that there is no one better than Lillard. And I don't know how the hierarchy will work there, but I'm sure that Lillard could make it work, and they would be perfect together. And so to me, it's the perfect pairing, and it's worth the waiting if the price is the same. And I think that you can send Ben Simmons for little return in terms of player to Minnesota just to make the salary work, and mm-hmm. 2-3 first rounders if the return is bad in terms of players, and you can add a few first rounders and send everything to Portland, and that will work.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I'm sure, to me, if it is going to involve the Raptors or Minnesota, it's just going to have to be a 3-team trade that involves Blazers, Sixers, Raptors. I think something could get done there.
I don't really know why the Raptors want Ben Simmons, but anyway.
I don't know either. I would rather just roll with what they've got, but it's probably just a signal that they'd like to stay young and competitive.
If you trade Pascal for Ben, then that is okay, but I don't know, it's almost the Spider-Man meme, where you just basically are trading two guys that have the same issues, and probably one, Ben Simmons, is better than the other. So for Philadelphia, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I don't see it being Pascal, just mm-hmm. because of his age. Maybe it's OG and Goran Dragic's contract. to get you there. You know, then yeah. like all the picks go to the Blazers. And then the Raptors end up with Ben and the Sixers end up with Dame. You know, yeah. something like that I think would make sense. Yeah.
Goran is a nice player to add to the Sixers. It would make extreme sense with Embiid. It would be very good. And even OG. But as you yeah. mentioned, I mean, if this is
well,
the
way, I'm saying in a three-team deal where OG I understand, goes
but
to
I was
Blazers.
Thinking, yes, I get that. I was thinking, well, maybe that package works as well for Philadelphia, and technically it works. I mean, you can probably play a lineup with Dragic, Anunoby, Embiid, and Harris, yeah. and mm-hmm. whoever as your fifth starter. That doesn't yeah. move the needle as much as you need. I mean, Brooklyn
no.
is very, very tough. And you really yeah. need a superstar.
You have to have Dame.
Yeah.
Dame or Bradley Beal. If the Sixers want to win, it's got to be Dame. Yeah. I mean, I'd just rather wait for Dame than even Beal.
Sure. Sure. No, I agree. I agree 100%.
So, yeah,
are you
I mean,
100% positive that he will become available?
Dame? He,
yes.
I'm pretty confident, yes. I'm pretty confident that he will. And the thing with Dragic can't be traded until October 5th. So yeah. 60 days or 2 months has to pass in order for them to be able to trade Dragic to aggregate him with somebody else. So they couldn't trade Dragic and Anunoby today.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something they've talked about. Or they talk about Dragic to Dallas or, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, but having that Dragic money helps the Raptors quite a bit because then you can yep. just hang on to everybody else.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry. Like, you can keep Pascal, you can keep Fred, you can keep all those guys. You know, if you want to keep Chris Boucher, who's making $7 million, like, it's not like he's making a ton, but it's just nice to have that salary to match in a trade. So I think, I mean, it's, I think something like that makes sense for everybody, especially if the Raptors do want in on Ben Simmons. I think it makes way more sense for the Timberwolves to be in on Ben mm-hmm. because they need to do something. Like, they've got to do something to change up the roster that they have today. And so I like that for them. But for the Raptors, it is a little confusing, but it also fits the mold. Of, you know, they took Scotty Barnes because of this reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe you're just like the best defensive team in the league, you know, down the road. And yeah. you just hope that somebody figures it out, you know, offensively as a primary guy.
That is a tall task, though.
It's a tall task. It is.
And
it is.
I don't remember if we discussed it on the pod or we just text about it. But I would really want to see Ben Simmons in Sacramento because I think yeah. that it makes total sense in terms of personnel, mm-hmm. in terms of what they can put on the table. Depending on how confident they are in De'Aaron Fox and or Tyrese Haliburton, I mean, mm-hmm. I would be open for a Fox for Simmons trade.
No question.
With probably a couple of firsts from Sacramento. Or just one first, one good first, and maybe a young player. Because that makes, probably again, it doesn't make Philadelphia the best team in the East.
Yeah.
But also it doesn't take too much from the assets that they have, because they can trade their future first. And De'Aaron Fox is probably as good as an asset, especially if you blossom alongside Embiid. You probably have another asset, young asset in your team. And maybe if they work out together, maybe you are a very good team. Maybe better than anticipated. I don't know. I think that makes sense for both teams.
Yeah.
But again, maybe they're too attached to their own players to pull a trade like that.
Yeah, I could see it being hard for that to happen, but I think it does make a lot of sense because the Sixers do need a primary ball handler. Mm-hmm. And Fox is still 23, man.
Yeah.
Like, he's still so young and has a lot of room to grow. And just, like, frankly, get him out of Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, get him into a better environment. You put him and Joel Embiid together. I mean, that's a deadly combo. And Fox has got to improve his shooting, but you have the amount of gravitational pull that Joel Embiid has would open up the lane for Fox like crazy. You know, something he's never seen before.
Now that I remember, I think I put it on Twitter and I got a lot of people saying that I'm mad. Now I'm probably drunk, according to Hoop69 on the chat. I just wouldn't. It's not a very difficult opinion to have to say that Simmons is better than Fox. I mean, he was all NBA. Fox was never near that kind of player. And yeah, we never saw De'Aaron Fox in the postseason. We never saw De'Aaron Fox in the postseason. I mean, I argue that you can go behind and pick and roll to De'Aaron Fox and just take a nap and he won't do anything. Mm-hmm. So you can employ the same scheme. It's just a different kind of player. And defensively, there is like a wide margin between them. Okay. Like,
Michele, you can anchor. You keep going. I've got to take a phone call real quick. You keep going.
Yeah. So I agree that it seems stupid and probably worth of your drunk Mickey, but if you go back and look at the numbers and you go back and watch Fox and other guys in Sacramento, there is a stark difference in the things that Ben Simmons does at an elite level. And like, I can ask you right now, what is this Fox does that is elite? He's very fast. He's not efficient in pick and roll. He's not efficient, period. He does not play defense. He can create, but I mean, he's not a top guy in terms of creation from the dribble. And so Ben Simmons is an elite rebounder for the position. He's an elite defender, period, in the NBA, worthy of top 10 every single year. And he is an issue in the playoffs because of the guys that he has around. Mainly because he plays in the same positions offensively. It's not that he plays in the same position. It's that he's efficient in the same positions where Embiid is. And that is a very, very difficult thing to do. So what I have in mind is, well, you put Simmons alongside Tyrese Haliburton and a couple of other guys that can dribble and shoot, and it changes the equation dramatically. Sacramento is not the best thing. It's not the best team to put any player on. But, I mean, if you surround Simmons with elite talent in terms of shooting, I think that he can be your Swiss Army knife that can glue everything together and make everyone else better. I don't see that in De'Aaron Fox. I see that De'Aaron can succeed in a very specific environment. Example, in Philadelphia, because he could have one of the elite pick and roll player and or elite big man in the league, and he can feed him. So whatever worked with Richaun Holmes will work 10,000 times better with Joel Embiid. But again, this opinion that Simmons is better or worse than De'Aaron Fox, it's not a done deal. I think a lot of NBA smart guys. It's not just me, and it's not definitely not just me today being drunk at, well, this is probably a good time to be drunk, like 9 p.m. in the evening. That would be almost okay. But yeah, I mean, now that you're waiting that Andrew returns, if you have any comment on that, I'll try to read that out loud so that we can keep going with the podcast. So basically, Hoopstock69 said that I'm drunk to suggest that Fox for Simmons swap plus a first, and now is arguing Simmons is a little better version of Draymond. You don't trade that for Fox and a first and a young player. The young player to me as like basically filler was not like a player of high value. But yes, if I'm the Sixers, if I'm a team that wants to be extremely better next year, I would absolutely trade De'Aaron Fox for a younger version of Draymond Green. Like, no doubt in my mind. Those kind of players, the Draymond Green kind of players, will make good teams, incredible. And if you want, if you have, if you think that what you have in Sacramento, which is a big if, is ready for like something else to move forward, then a guy like that makes absolute sense, especially if he's on the same timeline of your core. And also, this is why, and thank you, James Anderson, that is why Minnesota should try a trade like that, because that is the piece that they miss. And finally, since Andrew is back, oops, talk 69 again. If you're OKC, do you trade SGA and a first for Simmons? No, absolutely not. And now that we are we are talking about SGA, I don't really see SGA being in the same tier of De'Aaron Fox. It's not even close. I think that SGA has all NBA potential. I don't think that Fox has. And so, no, I wouldn't. But that is simple to me.
The Kings would make that trade because they've had no hope of being good. And they have lots of guards now. They have, I mean, I think they really believe in Halliburton. I think they do love Davion.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get yourself out of this rut somehow. And let's just say the personality differences between De'Aaron Fox and SGA are like the margin is wide. And the work ethic stuff, the margin is wide. And the situational issues that the Kings have, I think it is really hard for, I think it's hard for players to overcome and become elite players in Sacramento. And if you already have Ben Simmons, who is an all NBA caliber defender and has shown the ability to be an all NBA player, like he's already done that and he's already shown that ability. So I would do that. And also we have to recognize that Ben Simmons' value and the way he's perceived around the league is perhaps lower than it will ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And as a viewer and a NBA, somebody that follows the NBA, like you have to recognize that too. So I do think that he would benefit. And also, the fit with Simmons and Embiid has never been good. Like, it's never been a good pairing. It's been an awkward pairing since the beginning. And they had hoped that that would change. It never did change. They just made it work because they're both elite players. And so putting him next to a guy like Tyrese and putting him around shooting if Buddy Hield stays, things could unlock for Ben.
Yeah.
You may have said all this already, but
no, we're close to that. Without mentioning the actual players, but yeah, that is exactly what I have in mind. The comment that I think it's true by Grape Ape is, but Sacramento is still missing a real number one guy, especially if they trade Fox. Well, I already said that to me. Fox is nowhere near being a tier one player, so they don't have today, and they get a better one for cheap. And probably that raises their ceiling a little bit, and so it's tougher for them to get a number one guy. So that is a good, I would say. But they are still trying to win anyway. They're just bad at it. It's not that they are tanking, so.
Yeah, they're not.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree that it may not get them out of the rut, but standing pat's not getting him out of the rut either.
Yeah, and maybe they resuscitate in some, like they rejuvenate Ben Simmons, and he's way better. And that is the way in which you get better. I don't see Fox bringing you your number one guy. I see Fox getting you Ben Simmons probably. But you know, it's also the perception of Philadelphia. If they feel that like they can get more than Fox, then that deal is a non-starter for Philly, not for Sacramento.
Yeah, I still think the plan is Dame.
Yeah.
And so Fox is a massive downgrade from Dame.
Oh,
massive.
Yeah.
Like they're on different planets.
Yes.
So speaking of that, before we actually get to our main topic of the day, which is ranking the guards in the Western Conference and trying to figure out where SGA fits in the pecking order, not pecking order, but just in the order of best players in the West. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start with the best guards in the West.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And we're back from that quick break. Michele, let's talk through maybe just like our top five first. Who do you have in your top five guards in the Western Conference?
Top five is not where Shea is as of today.
Yeah.
And I think that
agreed.
Top five is also where Shea is extremely unlikely to be by the end of the season. And the way in which I'm thinking this ranking is not who will be the best player over the next five season or over the past five season, and including the next one, whatever. I'm strictly thinking you need to have a guard for next year only, and you have to factor everything into your decision, playing time, mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. And to me, even factoring all that, I don't see Shea being in the top five of today, and probably top four, absolutely not. I see Curry, Doncic, Lillard, and Devin Booker there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still struggle with the Phoenix guards. To me, are 4 and 5, 5 and 4, whatever. Chris Paul and Devin Booker there. So mm-hmm. I don't see Shea jumping them. Maybe Chris Paul.
Yeah, my five, I have Steph number one, Dame number two, Luka three,
mm-hmm.
Chris Paul four,
mm-hmm.
and then Donovan Mitchell five.
Oh, okay.
That's my five.
Okay.
That's fine. Are you giving me that I, the I to begin with?
Luka. After Dame.
Yeah.
I think that Luka is up for an insane season.
Yeah. I mean, it was splitting hairs.
Yeah.
You know, between those two. And basically, it's if I'm trying to win the title next year, I might rather have Dame. But it's like so close.
Yes. Oh, I agree.
It's incredibly close. Those top three, it's like the top three, we could go like full tiers, like they're all tier one. Like, who's my tier one?
I don't think so. Three. I have Curry in a separate tier. I really think that Steph
by himself.
Yes, I really think that Steph is the best, and there is a.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have him number one.
He's a player that can transform a playoff run by himself.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm overreacting to his past success, and I'm selling Luka short. What he's doing in international FIBA and also like in general in the NBA, it's mm-hmm. it's just insane. And next season he could very well take regular season into a different gear and just being like a complete force in the playoffs. We don't know.
Yeah.
So, and I see Lillard as a firm third. I think that after him, there is a steep, steep step, because mm-hmm. Chris Paul and Booker, or Chris Paul and Donovan Mitchell, are very good players, but not as good as those.
Yeah. I mean, my next three are Chris Paul, Mitchell, Booker.
Okay.
and you can quibble with the order that I have, you know, whether you think that Booker's better than Mitchell or that, you know, Chris Paul should be behind both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to fight on any of those issues because I don't think that they're that far off either. I just think what Chris Paul has done from an intangible standpoint, we forget like how dire that situation felt with Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, what are they? I mean, it feels similar to, it's not dissimilar to how like Minnesota feels now.
Yes.
Or, you know, where it's just like, man, like it's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's been a long time having Kat here and doesn't feel like anything's going to turn around.
Yeah.
And it felt the same to a degree. Now they had the 8-game, you know, stretch in the bubble where they won all their games, and then they got to take that to the Chris Paul team where they blew up and eventually became a great team. Yeah, that's great. I don't know. The situation, they needed something like Chris Paul to unlock everything. They went to the finals, and they may have made the play-in without Chris. Like, that's totally possible that they make the play-in without Chris, because Booker did take a massive leap on both ends last year.
And Ayton did.
Especially, and Ayton did as well. Ayton was incredible last year. Now, Minnesota needs a big jump from somebody else. They don't even have a guard that I would consider on this list at all. But they need a jump from somebody. But I just think the intangible stuff with Chris is just, you know, it's one of the big reasons why they jump. So I would have him above them. And then like Mitchell and Booker are both just incredible scoring guards. They mean a lot to their teams. They contribute on both ends. I just think they're both incredible.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I have Mitchell number 6. So it's not that we are having very different players in our top 6.
We didn't discuss this prior to the pod, by the way.
No.
I don't think we meant to have the same 6, but
I know that it's boring, but me and Andrew see the game in a very similar way. So, I mean, it's probably because of that. And you know, I really think that one of the reasons why, and this is a very good thing to discuss since we are talking Shea, I think that the way in which both Chris Paul and Booker leverage their mid-range in close game situation and generally in late game situation is one of the reasons why Phoenix had that kind of season. Because when you, there was an article, I don't remember if it was set, it was probably set by now. It was discussing the fact that when you have a very low variance shot, which is Chris Paul from 2 points, then that shot becomes extremely valuable in late game situation because you can rely on that, and the variance of it is lower. It's basically you have 2 possessions. If you take a 3, then you have a chance that you get 0. If you have a very low variance shot like Chris Paul, you get 2 points. That is a massive difference. That is, of course, over the course of a game, an entire game or a season, that really doesn't have the same effect. You will see that a Chris Paul 2-pointer is less valuable than a 3. But when you have a finite number of possessions and the game is tied, then that having that kind of low variance weapon is extremely important. And Shea has that. The reason why OKC was so bad in terms of net rating, but was so good in terms of results, is probably a little bit of luck. But the fact that they had an efficient creator in late game situations, like, this is something that alone is worth a lot. Mm-hmm. And I can't decide if I want to put Shea at 7 or 8, but I think he's there. And I think that by the end of the season, someone would say, well, maybe Shea is better than Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
I think it's not impossible.
That's a total possibility there. I've just seen Mitchell do it on the big stage. And SGA, the last time he had that opportunity was with this Thunder team against Houston, and he didn't play very well. You know, that's the only missing piece from Shea, is like, let's see him do it.
I want to push against
in the playoffs. Go ahead. Yeah.
I really think that he had not an exciting series against the Rockets, but he still had a very efficient one. And he was not in the best situation to succeed. The team was not like rotating around him. He had no one to attack in pick and roll, which is something that, especially because there were non-shooters on the court. And so I argue that that was the worst possible team that he could face. If you think about Ja Morant, that he had an amazing run against Golden State, that was one of the perfect teams to feast on because they don't have point of attack defense in pick and roll. Like, that is a massive difference. And also, he had all the time the ball in his hands. That was not Shea's team. And so I really want to see him leading a team, and he won't probably next season. So he wouldn't have that chance, not because of him, but because of the other guys that they have around. A couple of very easy to find stats that I think are extremely important. I just filter Western Conference guard more than 20 games and usage more than 20%, which is league, like lead guards. True shooting. Shea is number, guess that please. Two. Yeah. Curry 65.5, Shea 62.3. Effective field goal, 60.5 is Curry, 55.1, that is Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Guys like, if you rank in terms of true shooting, for example, I mean, that, like guys like Booker or Mitchell, those are far behind. Like, Mitchell is not even in the top 15.
Yeah. And I'm fully aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that any time the Jazz have been in a playoff series, like, it's Donovan Mitchell's stamp is on the series.
Sure.
And there's something to that. And we haven't, I'm not saying Shea doesn't have that in him. And I'm not saying he was horrible. He wasn't horrible against the Rockets. It's just that he didn't put his stamp on that series.
Oh, sure.
Like, he just didn't.
Oh, sure.
He didn't defend well. They were attacking. They were attacking him.
That is true.
And that was a huge, huge problem with what was going on with the Thunder in that series. Had he played to his capabilities on both ends, I think the Thunder win that series. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
But, and it's not like saying that, like, the 16-5-4 that he averaged in the series is bad. Like, it wasn't bad. It was just that there was some stuff left on the table. And so we just need to see more from him. And in the West, I mean, I full disclosure, I have SGA 7th on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And it was between he and Ja that I'm trying to figure out, like, which do I think is better? Like, Shea has him in almost every category.
Yeah.
You know, points, like, if you just go counting stats alone, like, the, like, Ja's better at assists, is the only, he has more assists, 7.4 to 5.9. But all shooting splits favor SGA.
Yeah.
Efficiency is through the roof for SGA.
Yeah.
And the versatility that SGA offers is more than Ja. And this isn't to, like, say that Ja's not good. Ja's a great player. But I think that I would rather have Shea. And also, just like, Ja relies on athleticism so much. And, you know, if we're talking about a lengthy career, you know, and one that is sustainable for 15 years or whatever, I would probably favor Shea, because he just, his shiftiness is what gets him where he's going. And he just has an incredible shot-making ability. That Ja may get to, but he just hasn't gotten there yet. You know, he shot 30% from three on the season. I mean, it's almost 12 percentage points difference between the two, where the three-point shot matters way more today than it ever has.
Yeah, that's why I'm so confused that you have him, like, 8.
Who?
Ja. I think there is a case.
Why have him 8?
Yeah, I think there is a case to have Ross in between.
So, I mean,
Tell me. Like, Russ shot 29.5% from three. What is the big difference between 29 and change to 30?
Yeah, I get it. And Ja had some rough stretches last year.
Yeah, so did Russ.
Memphis.
But Russ at the end of the season was unbelievable for most part.
Unbelievable. I mean, if we're just taking that sample and cutting that out, what is he, 5 on this list?
Yeah.
4?
Yeah. No, I will say.
I mean, I'd have him and Chris Paul side by side.
Yeah, I had Chris.
If we're just talking about that stretch alone.
No.
But that's
right. That's fine.
Give me the rest of the pie, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, he was maybe the most helpful point guard in the last stretch of the season, and maybe the most detrimental point guard in the first part of the season.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. I don't know what he is. I don't know where he belongs here, but I would put more trust in SGA and Ja to start the season than I would for Westbrook to do that all year. Now, can Westbrook do it when it matters? Perhaps he can. And he's not going to have to go all out again when he has LeBron and AD on his team. So where does he fit in? I think it's way easier to fit SGA into a team. Maybe Ja is... I mean, I have Ja and Westbrook just like right there together. So having Westbrook 9 and Ja 8, I mean, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
They're both very similar players. I mean, they're not...
No.
You know, they play similar style of basketball.
Ja is a floater.
That's something that Westbrook needed. And Darnell Mayberry wrote about it early on in his career.
Yeah.
That this is something that Westbrook needs.
Yeah.
And it just never happened for him. And it obviously didn't hinder him too much. He won the MVP, for crying out loud. But it is something that would have taken him to a completely different level. But for Westbrook at this stage in his career, with all the miles and all like the surgeries and everything that he's had going on, to still be a top 10 guard in the West when the West is still stacked, that's something, you know. That's something. And for him to return to the West, you know, after being in the East for a season, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it makes sense to have him there. But I don't know. There's growth to be had for Ja Morant.
Yes.
You know? And I don't know. James Anderson says Ja wasn't efficient. Where does efficiency come in when determining how these guys rank? Ja was similar in efficiency to Anthony Edwards. I think it factors in quite a bit. I would also factor in winning.
Yeah.
You know, like Anthony Edwards putting up the stats that he did with the Minnesota Timberwolves, cool. It didn't translate to anything but having cool dunks and cool stats.
Yeah, it was not efficient and not correlated to winning. Ja was not efficient and he correlated to winning. Shea was very efficient and he didn't correlate too much to winning.
Exactly. Ja wins games. Like, he just flat out wins games. And that... I mean, that to me matters. To take that Memphis team, you know, these past two seasons, you know, they were 34 and 39 last season, 33 and 49 the season before. Like, that's an accomplishment, man. Like, that's an accomplishment. No, 38 and 34, sorry, last season, and then 33 and 39 the season before. Like, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
To finish above 500 for that Memphis team in the Western Conference, where the competition level is high, and honestly, to get the season that they did from Ja, and then you factor in the season they got from Jaren Jackson Jr., who played 11 games last year, only 23 minutes in those 11 games, I would have said, yeah, they're gonna be back in the lottery without Jaren, and they weren't. And some of that was the guys that stepped in played better than they thought they would. You know, Jonas was very good. Dylan Brooks was awesome. Kyle Anderson was nice. You know, that's great. But like,
he was the engine.
JJJ is supposed to be their guy.
No, and Ja was the engine of everything. Now, everything. I want to go in the chat again because I think that there are guys that are worth mentioning. And I think that the reasoning behind them not being in the top 5 nor top 10 is health. We're talking Klay Thompson, we're talking Jamal Murray. I mean, those players at the top of their skills are probably better than Shea, surely Klay, probably also Jamal. But what I said at the beginning was, I want a player for next season only. And this is basically how you do all NBA. You don't project too much into the future. You just stick with what you saw, and you basically decide who you want and who's the best for you.
Yeah.
I think that there are so many questions about Clay. So many. And Jamal may play 35 games.
Yeah.
20 games, for what we know. So I think that the season worth of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has like some sort of injury concerns, but not to that degree.
Sure.
I think that you have to factor in. And again, I mean, to me, if like I like Jamal Murray, but he is to me kind of in the same ballpark and probably below Shai, even when healthy.
I think he's far below Shai. I think that
not far, no, but below, yes. I don't see far, but I see below.
I mean, not in number, but in skill set. I think he's pretty far below.
Yeah,
like I have him at 10.
Yeah,
just because I think that he comes back, Denver's a title contender if he's back and he's like really back. But yeah, that's, and I don't have Clay on my list at all. Clay's not playing until Christmas or maybe after. And we haven't seen him in so long, and the age stuff is a factor. You know, I feel way more confident about Jamal Murray coming back and what that looks like. And Jamal was having a great season last year. Had he stayed healthy and everything, I think that, you know, maybe this is more of a conversation, because, you know, he's 21 points per game, 40% from three on six attempts. You know, like that's significant. He's almost 87% from the free throw line, but the fact that like his numbers are so low at the from free throw, like three attempts per game. I mean, that doesn't cut it for me. Like if you want to be like a primary guy, like three, that just ain't it. You know, like that is not star level stuff. You know, Shai was six attempts last season.
Yes.
And
he will probably improve upon that.
Yeah, I expect that to be eight. I expect it to be eight plus, and that's where you get in like the Trae Young area of like guards, where it's okay.
Yes,
I get 8 to 10 points every night just because of how aggressive I am. Like that's what happens.
Yeah,
and then if my shot's falling, I'm gonna put up 40 on you, and if it's not falling, I'm gonna score 25. You know, that's the way it goes every single night. That's what happened with that's what stars do. That's what Durant did, just every single night. And he had, I don't remember what the streak was, but he had, you know, 30 points so many games in a row, because it was just, hey, I'm getting 12 points from the free throw line every night, and there's zero things you can do about that. And that's something Jamal hasn't done at all.
Yeah, you couldn't also stop his mid-range jumper. That is another story.
Yeah, no kidding.
I fully expect, maybe to close on Shai, maybe you can go back to your list because you have an actual one. I just had something in my head. I really think that Shai, if he wants to take 20 shots per game, he can definitely average 27 or more.
I have zero questions about that.
And if he does that, by even being a little bit less efficient, like staying in the 57 to 59 true shooting, which is below where he's at by 4 points, then he would be definitely top six, top seven in the league.
Yeah.
In the Western Conference. In the league, probably around top 10/12, because the East have like a lot of good guards.
There's a lot.
Even great guards.
A lot of good guards in the East. Yeah, I made actually a top 20 list for the whole league. And we can talk through that here in a second if we want to. But last two in the West, I have De'Aaron Fox, 11, the guy that we discussed a lot earlier. I think that he would be like this tier that exists even below all these guys. I think Jamal is like the end of this tier that probably starts with SGA, Ja, Westbrook, Jamal Murray is probably one tier. And then, honestly, I just don't care that much who you put after those guys. They're all in probably, there's maybe a tier of like four or five guys that are next that are just like, okay, they're young enough to where they could, you know, foreseeably like blow up a little bit here or there, but they're not, these guys aren't changing anything for your franchise. Like they're your firmly your second or third best guys. Like De'Aaron Fox is probably at the top of that. I think DeJounte Murray deserves a mention, you know, as like an honorable mention in the West, if we're talking outside of the top 10.
Yeah, but it's like, to me, there's no chances. Like, hot take, there are more chances that Jalen Green in season one, it looks closer to a number one guy than Jamal Murray will ever do.
You mean DeJounte Murray?
DeJounte Murray, yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that is possible. That is totally possible. I thought about putting Jalen...
He will not correlate to winning.
Yeah, I thought about putting... Green on this... But I mean, I really didn't. Honestly, I really didn't. I need to see it. I need to see him do it.
Yeah.
And you just... The Summer League is not enough to, you know, get me to believe that it's real. And so... Let's see it. You know, CJ McCollum is another guy that probably deserves mention on here.
Yes.
Then, like, who else is it? I mean, the guys, the guards for Minnesota deserve, like, an honorable
mention. Is Mike Conley probably?
Yeah, Mike Conley definitely deserves mention here, yes. I almost completely forgot about him, to be honest, because he's, like, the most neutral name in the NBA, it feels like. But he was good.
I don't know how to feel about Russell.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do with D'Lo? What do you do with Anthony Edwards? Both entertaining players, but like, what do you do? Where do you put them on this list? Yeah. What are they doing to help you win games?
Yeah. Maybe you can put Fox, McCullough, then Conley. In a tier that is not very below. Jamal Murray is not that far off. And then you have all the other guys that either because they play elite defense or because they are very entertaining on offense, they are just there.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably right. Where it's Fox, McCollum, Conley, in whatever order you prefer. And then it's probably DeJounte Murray, D'Lo, Anthony Edwards... whoever else that you maybe believe in. Go.
Dort,
16, easy. You know, Giddy, Josh Giddy at guard, where we put him, because he's clearly just a guard.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was thinking, like, it's completely irrelevant for our exercise here, but I really think that having a pass-heavy guard alongside Shea is not bad, because I think that you can have Shea as your, well, just give me a ball and I cook. And if you want to play like some team friendly basketball, let's do it. Then I'll get the ball and I'll do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. And so I think that if Giddy is able to get the shot to a non-horrible percentage, I think that duo will make sense, because Giddy will be an elite passer, no matter how many pick and rolls he'll run. And together with Shea, that can pass the ball, but maybe it's more on the I will just cook side of things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad pairing. It's not a bad pairing at all. I mean, the if on the Giddy shooting is a big one, but the fact that Shea can play alongside a pass heavy guard, I think it's something that will not hold him in any way. And so actually he can, like, a very good passing guard maybe can give him a couple of shots, easy shots per game, which is something that could be useful for Shea as well.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the Thunder look like this year. I assume just because of the age of the roster and the fact that don't underestimate the fact that they turned the slot that went to Al Horford, you know, last season, that went to Chris Paul the season before, that went, you know, like that's a significant slot that they just said, we're doing away with that slot. Like that slot no longer exists. And so I mean, you could argue that maybe Favors takes that slot just because you brought him in from nothing. But Favors is, and Horford are very far off on the quality of player that they are and the kind of help they can provide. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, like they just have, they're all young guys. Like every single player on the team is young. So I don't think they're going to be good. I think they could be fun. I think they're going to play an exciting brand of basketball. I think they all fit what Mark wants to do for the team, which I think is important. So I think that's great. Josh Smith wants to know where we would put Jalen Green and Cade straight out of the gate on a list. Far down the list, maybe like if we're talking the whole NBA, maybe we're talking 21 or something like that, just to start with.
That seems high.
Yeah, it might be high. I mean, here's my top 20, and tell me if you think that they belong, you know, above or below. Steph, Dame, James Harden, Kyrie, Luka, that's probably like one tier. Like the order I didn't really care mm-hmm. about.
If you put Kyrie and Luka in the same tier, I will be offended with you for the rest of your
Kyrie
life.
Kyrie is so good.
In my life.
Kyrie is so good.
Kyrie is so good, but it doesn't belong in the same tier as the guys that you already mentioned, I think.
Yeah, I think I disagree. I think he's incredible.
Okay. I'll be mad at you forever.
Trae Young, Chris Paul, Drew Holiday, Mitchell, Booker, Beal, LaVine, SGA. I have SGA like the 12, 13, 14 range in the whole NBA. Mm-hmm. Ja, Jamal Murray, Westbrook, Lowry, De'Aaron Fox, Brogdon, Fred VanVleet. You know, Conley is in there as well. You know, Conley's probably up there a little bit further than I even said. Yeah.
No, I think that is actually a very good list.
CJ McCollum. I mean, I would start to, like, around the the Fox, Brogdon, Fred VanVleet. Like, you can convince me that those guys are going to be in that range this season.
Maybe not Jalen Green, but Cade could be.
Yeah, I put Cade. You could easily put Cade there. Jalen Green, I'm so interested to see how he'll look. I think that the view of him is probably inflated from Summer League. I think the view of all the Rockets players, to be honest, is inflated from Summer League.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll see that Şengün is not worth two first-round picks.
Two first-round picks is a lot. And I know, trust me, I wrote this article with Zach Harper that went last week where he asked me three questions and I put them on there. You can go theathletic.com/downtodunk and read it for 50% off right now. And like the comments below are just, there were, I don't know how many Şengün mentions there were, like 10 in the comments. Just unbelievable. It's like, guys, I think Şengün is going to be fun. I think he's going to be a good player, but two first-round picks is a lot. Is a lot to give up for a guy that hadn't played in the league yet.
Hey, he may be a better version of Vucevic.
He could be.
And we could say, in 5 years, we screwed up.
Yeah.
But still, Vucevic in his prime was worth two first-round picks. If he's better than that, then we just... It's almost like missing half of a first round.
Yeah.
Pick.
Well, the thing about
which is
Vooch, though, like Vooch is 7 feet.
Yeah.
You know, Şengün is not.
Capable of doing many things, which Şengün may be able to do.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Oh yeah, maybe. Not.
I heard the comp for Şengün being Carl Landry.
I don't know.
I think it's an interesting comp.
Because he's not it. Look, Şengün could be like an extremely productive player that is not embarrassing on defense.
Yeah.
And if he's that, then probably he's a very good pick at 16.
I think it's a good pick at 16.
That is not the
point.
I think
it's a good pick at 16.
Yeah.
I would've, if I were at 16, that's the pick that I would have made too.
Yeah. No. That wasn't my pick.
I know it wasn't your pick. I would have done it.
You know which one. And that's why I'm mad with OKC, because I really think that Trey Murphy was the perfect compliment for this team.
Murph would have been helpful, man. He's good. He's really good.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. And like, can you imagine having Murphy, Shea, Giddy, Poku, and the big man? You have all the guys that are 6'6 and above, and all capable defenders. That would be my dream. Like, it's Toronto, but with actual shooting.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you have 6'9 guys that can shoot the basketball.
Yeah, I understand. I would have just liked to try out Şengün as a pick and roll guy, but
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The Şengün stuff will all play itself out. But it's just so early to call it either way, you know.
Oh yeah.
There's just a lot of people that are the outcry of Şengün is just kind of I've hit my ceiling of annoyance with it. I'll say that. Like, let's just like watch it play out. If it plays out not in favor of the Thunder, it wouldn't be the first time that something they've done hasn't worked out. You know, and it doesn't mean that somebody's the worst GM or whatever. Like, it's, you know, it was explained that like it hit a threshold, right? Like, it hit the threshold of like, this is too much. This is too much to give up for the 16th pick. And you have to take it. So.
Yes. Yes. I mean, again, MPJ was drafted at 14. I'm not saying that OKC will draft an MPJ.
Yeah.
But they're buying themselves the draft to be ready to draft an MPJ whenever he comes up. And remember, you were so mad about Şengün, but you were so happy about the two first-round picks that OKC packaged together to get Poku. Mm-hmm. You don't get to do it both ways. Like, you're either happy because you have two first-round picks that you can play to get the guy that you want, or you can be mad because you use a first-round pick when you could have two. Mm-hmm. Just one or the other, not both. Yeah. And I think that it's so... And then Poku can be bad and Şengün can be great. But the point is, you need to factor the opportunities, the likelihood that player will reach his ceiling, what you want to build as a franchise. We don't know those players. This is a reality. Like, we don't know how they are. I mean, you guys are like, you have a normal job like I do, not like Andrew, who has an amazing job. Like, you are in an office and there are personalities. There are guys that are able to do their job as the leader of that office commands. There are guys that are just on their own. And you have to manage those things when you want to build something that is cohesive, that where you have to put something above like the entire construction. Otherwise, you are in a market that has so many better places. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have something special. You want to build something strong, something that is more than a brand, something that is that players will recognize as a place where you do stuff in a certain way.
Yeah.
And if you want to build that, you have to be extremely careful.
Yeah.
I mean, the Lakers, they don't possibly care. You can go from Russell Westbrook to Dennis Schroeder, and you will have, if Russ doesn't pan out, who cares? You can move it.
Yeah.
They will find a way to move it,
yeah.
to move him, and they will just retry because they are LA and whatever. They can do anything. Mm-hmm. OKC doesn't have that luxury. And so they have to build stuff in a different way. Yeah. And they always did. I mean, they traded away Reggie Jackson because it didn't fit. Mm-hmm. The talent was there, clearly. Mm-hmm. He was a talented guy. But at a certain point, you are in a very specific and special market, and you have to make decision in a certain way.
Yeah.
And again, give this franchise time.
Yeah.
They will make the best of it.
Yeah. Well, and then the Great Bait brings up the fact that they got two quote unquote first for Şengün. Like, take a look again, man. Like, take a look again. Like, if you the argument that's being put out there on Twitter and on Reddit, wherever else, that these are two fake firsts, like, go look again. It's not the case. It's not true.
No.
These will convey at some point. So, like, yes. Just like, stop with the whole fake first thing. Like, that is a lazy argument. That is an argument where you haven't looked at the protections. You haven't looked at how far down the road these picks have to convey. And Detroit is going to be good at some point. Like, they have a really good front office.
Yes.
they have a good foundation of a team. They're going to be good at some point, or at least mediocre enough for that pick to convey. It's like, we can stop with the whole, these are fake firsts. Like, did they get a top 10 pick for the 16th pick? Heck no. Of course they didn't. Like, they got a top 10 pick for Vooch. Great. Like, Vooch has been an all-star before. So, like, but don't act like they're fake. Like, that's a bad argument. That's always been a bad argument. All right, we got to go. You got to go. Thanks so much for listening to our show. Hope you guys are doing great. Hope you guys have a great Monday. Great start to your week. Alex and I will be back on Wednesday. Slam and Jam is back this week as well. So look for that. I'm trying to line up a very, very special guest. So look out for that. Hope you guys are doing well. And we'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.